Hello, and welcome to another edition of Maplewood Barn Radio Theater, brought to you in conjunction with KBIA. Tonight we bring you audio presentations of two short stories by Edna Ferber, The Homely Heroine and The Leading Lady. We have delved into some of the more obscure tales by Ferber to bring you a lesser-known but very strong woman named Pearlie Schultz. And now we hope you enjoy these two stories about Pearlie. We begin this evening's show with The Homely Heroine.
Millie Whitcomb at the Fancy Goods and Notions counter in Bascom's Emporium beckoned me with her finger. I'd been standing with Kate O'Malley, pretending to admire her new basket weaving, while she told me a droll story about a judge's wife.
It must have been a hoot. On the train coming up from Chicago, Mrs. Judge Porterfield had worn the porter's coat over her chilly shoulders by mistake instead of her husband's.
Kate O'Malley can tell a funny story in a way to make the after-dinner pleasantries of a Washington diplomat sound like the clumsy jest told in a village grocery store. But I broke away and strolled over to Millie's counter in response to her beckoning finger.
I wanted to tell you that I read that last story of yours, and I liked it, all but the heroine. She had an adorable throat and hair that waved away from her white brow, and eyes that now were blue and now gray. Say, why don't you write a story about an ugly girl?
My land, Millie, it's bad enough trying to get them to accept my stories as they are. The girls at Bascom's are not gossips. They are too busy for that. But they are delightfully well-informed. There is news at Bascom's that our daily paper never hears of and wouldn't dare print if it did. So when Millie Whitcomb of the Fancy Goods and Notions counter expressed her wish for a homely heroine, I did not resent the suggestion. On the contrary, it sent me home in a thoughtful mood, casting about for a really homely heroine. There has never been a really ugly heroine in fiction. Authors have started out bravely writing about an unlovely woman, but they never have the courage to allow her to remain plain. On page 237, she puts on a black lace dress and red roses, and the combination brings out unexpected tawny lights in her hair and olive tints in her cheeks, and there she is, the same old beautiful heroine. So when I tell you that I am choosing Pearlie Schultz as my leading lady, you need to understand that she is ugly, not only when the story opens, but to the bitter end. In the first place, Pearlie is fat, not plump or rounded or dimpled or deliciously curved, but fat. She bulges in all the wrong places, including her chin. Pearlie Schultz used to sit on the front porch summer evenings and watch the couples stroll by and weep in her heart. A fat girl with a fat girl's soul is a comedy, but a fat girl with a thin girl's soul is a tragedy. Pearlie, in spite of her 200 pounds, had the soul of a willow branch. In the grocery store one day, she told me,
"The walk in front of my house is lined with a row of big trees, and almost every evening strolling couples pause there for a romantic interlude. I watch them from the porch."
You could tell by the way she spoke that Pearlie had never walked into the shadows with a young man who had quickened her pulse. She had never been surprised with a quick arm about her and eager lips pressed warmly against hers. In the daytime, Pearlie worked as a public stenographer at the Burke Hotel. She normally went without breakfast, but it made no difference. At the end of each month, she usually found that she weighed 3 pounds more than she had the month before. The folks at home never joked with Pearlie about her weight. Whenever Pearlie asked the inevitable question of the fat woman,
"Am I as fat as she is?"
"You? Certainly not. You're looking a bit peaked lately, Pearlie, and your blue skirt just ripples in the back. It's getting so loose on you."
Of such blessed stuff are mothers made. But if the gods had denied Pearlie all the charms of face or form, they had been decent enough to bestow on her one gift. Pearlie could cook like an angel. No, better than an angel, for no angel could wear those flowing kimono-like sleeves without getting them in the soup. Pearlie could take rump roast and some suet and onion and a cup or so of water and make a pot roast you could cut with a fork. She could turn out a deliciously good cake, all covered with white icing. And her biscuits fell apart with the lightest touch, with little pools of golden butter inside. Oh, Pearlie could cook. So on weekdays, Pearlie rattled the typewriter keys at the Burke Hotel. But on Sundays, she shooed her mother out of the kitchen, with her mother protesting,
"Now, Pearlie, don't fuss over the dinner. You ought to get your rest on Sunday instead of standing over a hot stove all morning."
"Hot fiddlesticks, Ma. It ain't hot. This is a gas stove. And I'll only get fat if I sit around. You put on your black and white dress and go to church. Call me when you've got as far as your corsets, and I'll puff your hair for you in the back."
As the public stenographer at the Burke Hotel, it was Pearlie's job to take letters dictated by travelers. As proof of her plainness, none of the traveling men, not even Max Baum, who was so fresh that the girl at the cigar counter actually had to squelch him, ever called Pearlie baby doll or tried to make a date with her. Not that Pearlie would have ever allowed them to, but she was never given the chance to turn them down. On the night that Sam Millard strolled up to talk to her, Pearlie was working late. She had promised to get out a long, intricate letter for Max Baum so he could get back on the road. The irrepressible Max had departed with great bombast and clatter, and Pearlie was preparing to go home when Sam approached her.
"I just came from the Gaiety Theater across the street in a vain search for some after-supper entertainment. Boy, am I disappointed. The shabby leading lady with orange-colored hair somehow picked me out of the crowd as the target for her love song."
"Are you sure she was singing to you, or was it just part of the act?"
"She ran up to the very edge of the stage, almost falling into the crowd, and informed me through the medium of song that she liked my smile. I was as cute as could be, and I was just the boy for her. The audience was delighted, but I was embarrassed."
"What's the problem, then? Sounds like you don't need to be lonely this evening."
"Well, ordinarily I would not have minded it, but this evening I could not stop thinking about my girlfriend's letter in my pocket. We're going to get married as soon as I return to New York. Today's letter was full of worries about the temptations of traveling salesmen, the hurt that might be inflicted on their wives, and the code of honor that should govern such relationships. After that, the leading lady across the street scared me half to death."
"So what did you do?"
"I fled, as if the hounds of hell were chasing me. Then I saw you sitting here, and you look, well, safe, if you don't mind me saying so. Ever since you took that dictation from me this morning, I liked you, and I need someone to talk to."
"So you're from New York?"
"Yes, that is my home."
"Doesn't surprise me. I've heard New Yorkers can get bored in Paris. I never saw a New Yorker yet who didn't talk about how the sky is bluer and the grass is greener and the girls are prettier than any place in the world."
"Oh, now quit kidding around. You'd be lonesome for the city, too, if you had been born and raised in it and hadn't seen it for 4 months."
"New to the road, aren't you?"
"How did you know?"
"Well, you can generally tell. They don't know what to do with themselves during the evening, and they look rebellious when they go into the dining room. The old-timers just look resigned."
"Say, you're pretty sharp. I wonder if the time will ever come when I'll look resigned at the hotel dinner table. Why, girl, I've just got so I just eat things that have covers on them, like baked potatoes in the shell and hard-boiled eggs and baked apples and oranges that I can peel and nuts."
"Why, you poor man, you shouldn't do that. You'll get so thin your girl won't know you. But you are loyal, I must say, writing to her every day."
"How did you know?"
"You've been here 2 days now, and I notice you dictate all your letters except the longest one, and you write that one off in a corner of the writing room all by yourself, grinning the whole time."
"Say, would you mind if I walked home with you? I've just avoided a terrible temptation, and I'm lonesome."
"Certainly. I would be happy for the company."
It made Pearlie smile. And when Pearlie smiled, she looked awful. It was a glorious evening in the early summer, moonless, velvety, and warm. As they strolled homeward, Sam told her all about the girl.
"We have an apartment, although it is tiny, even by New York standards. I should only be on the road a couple more years. It is kind of an initiation the company makes everyone go through. Before long, my job will be in the home office."
"That will make your girl feel better, more secure."
"Here, look. This is a picture of her."
"My, she is beautiful. You are a very lucky man, and she is a lucky lady.
Pearlie, you are a good listener.
And you are so in love, and so pathetically eager to do a good job for the firm.
And I am happy to have found someone I can confide in. But being a traveling salesman is a dog's life. Any fellow on the road earns his salary these days, you can bet your last dollar on that. I used to think it was all about sleeping in late and sitting on the grand front porch of the hotels, watching the pretty girls go by. I didn't know about the packing, and the unpacking, and the rotten train service, and the grouchy customers, and the canceled appointments, and the lousy grub.
Oh yes, I understand. One time, a man told me that twice a week, regular as clockwork, he dreamed of the way his wife cooked chicken noodle soup.
My folks are German, and my mother, holy smokes, can she cook? I just can't get her potato pancakes out of my mind. And her roast beef tasted and looked like roast beef, and not like a wet red flannel rag like the dining room here.
Say, tomorrow's Sunday. You're staying over another night, aren't you?
Yes, I'm staying through until Monday.
Well, come over and eat dinner with us. If you've forgotten how real food tastes, I can give you a meal that'll jog your memory.
Oh, really? You're awfully nice, but I couldn't think of imposing on you.
Oh, you wouldn't be imposing. Don't be so shy. I'm not letting you in for anything. I may be homelier than an English suffragette, and I know my figure is all bumps, but there's one thing you can't take away from me, and that's my cooking. I can cook, boy, in a way to make your mother's Sunday dinner look like Mrs. Newlywed's first attempt at rubbery biscuits and runny gravy. And I don't mean any disrespect to your mother when I say it. I'm going to have noodle soup and fried chicken and hot biscuits and cream beans from our own garden and strawberry shortcakes with real...
Hush! That's enough! If I'm not there, you'll know that I passed away during the night, and you could telephone the clerk to break in my door.
The grim reaper spared him, and the next day Sam came to Pearlie's house, was introduced to the family, and ate like a field hand. He almost forgot to talk during the soup, and he went back 3 times for chicken, and by the time the strawberry shortcake was half consumed, he was looking at Pearlie with a sort of awe in his eyes. Later that night, he came over to thank Pearlie for the meal and to say goodbye. He and Pearlie strolled down as far as the park and back again.
I didn't eat any supper. I was still stuffed from lunch. Plus, it would have been sacrilege after that dinner of yours. Honestly, I don't know how to thank you, being so good to a stranger like me.
It was my pleasure, Sam.
When I come back next trip, I expect to have my girl with me, and I want her to meet you. She's refined and beautiful, but she wouldn't know a porterhouse from a rasher of bacon. I'll tell her about you. In the meantime, if there's anything I can do for you, just name it.
You see that clump of thick shadows ahead of us, where those big trees stand in front of our house?
Sure, I see them.
Well, when we step into the deepest, blackest shadow right in front of our porch, I want you to reach up and put your arm around me and kiss me on the mouth, just once. And when you get back to New York, you can tell your girl I asked you to.
Well, I don't really have to tell her, do I?
As they stepped into the depths of the soft black shadows, he took off his hat and reverently made Pearlie's wish come true. Now, Millie Whitcomb didn't like the story of the homely heroine after all. She said that a steady diet of such literary fare would give her indigestion. Also, she objects on the ground that no one got married, that is, the heroine didn't. And she says that a heroine who does not get married isn't a heroine at all. She thinks she prefers the pink-cheeked, blonde-haired, blue-eyed goddess kind of heroine, after all. About a week later, though, Pearlie caught another side of the story. The leading lady with the orange hair, who had tempted Sam so severely, lay on her bed in the Burke Hotel and wept. Not as you have seen leading ladies weep, becomingly, with eyebrows pathetically V-shaped, mouth quivering, sequined bosom heaving. The leading lady wept as a woman actually weeps, with her head burrowed deeply into the lumpy hotel pillow. Presently, the leading lady sat up wearily, raising herself on one elbow and pushing her hair back from her forehead. Not as you have seen a leading lady pass a lily hand across her alabaster brow, but as a heartsick woman pushes back her hair. As she looked around the room, her eye fell on the phone, which stood on a small stand beside her bed. She picked up the handset.
Yes, Bellman. This is Miss Fox in room 327. Is there a woman around this place? I don't mean waitresses or concession girls.
Well, that's a strange request. What kind of woman are you looking for?
Oh, I don't know. Just someone who is a good listener.
Oh, why, there's Pearlie Schultz.
Who's she?
She's the hotel stenographer. Whenever anyone runs into trouble here in the hotel, they always go to Pearlie. She's the best when it comes to listening.
Blonde, an Irish crochet collar with a black velvet bow on her chest.
Oof, Pearlie? No, you must have gotten Pearlie mixed with some garden variety girls around here. Pearlie's fat, and she wears specs, and she's got a double chin. Her hair is skimpy, and she won't wear a wig. Why, no traveling salesman has ever tried to flirt with Pearlie. She's what you call a real big woman. You'd never mistake her for one of the chorus girls across the street.
Will you ask her to come up here and talk to me? Tell her I said please.
15 minutes later, footsteps sounded down the hall. The leading lady cocked her head to catch it and smiled blissfully. It was a heavy, comfortable footstep, under which a board or two creaked. There came a big, sensible thump, thump, thump at the door with stout knuckles. Pearlie Schultz looked down at the leading lady kindly, as a mastiff might look at a terrier.
You must be Pearlie Schultz.
Yep, that's me. Lonesome for a bosom to cry on.
Yes, I need a friend. Someone to talk to.
You tell me all about it.
Oh, I am so lonely. I'm playing the leading lady in a 2-bit show at the Gaiety Theater across the street. About a week ago, there was a handsome man in the second row. I was hoping to get a date out of him, but it didn't work out. He must have found someone else.
Well, who knows? Maybe he had a girlfriend back home and wanted to be true to her. It might not have anything to do with you.
Perhaps you're right. But then why do I feel so miserable?
I bet you haven't had a decent, close-to-nature powwow with a woman for weeks, have you?
How did you know?
You've got that hungry look. There was a lady drummer here last winter, and she had the same expression. She was so sick of eating her supper and then going up to her ugly room and reading and sewing all evening that it was a wonder she stayed out of trouble. She said it was easy enough for the men. They could play pool and go to a show and talk to anyone that looked good to them. But if she tried to amuse herself, everybody'd say she was a loose woman. She cottoned to me like a burr to a wool skirt. She traveled for a perfume company and said she hadn't talked to a woman, except shop clerks, for weeks and weeks.
That's it. Why, I haven't talked, I mean really talked, to a woman since the company went out on the road. I'm leading lady of the second wife company, you know. It's one of those small cast plays with only 5 people in it. I play the wife, and I'm the only woman in the cast. It's terrible. Except for this one love song I get to sing. Usually there is one man in the audience I pick out to sing to. That's where I thought I might get a date last week. But no, he fled like a scalded cat.
That's too bad.
I ought to be thankful just to get a role these days. And I was, too. But I didn't know it would be like this. I'm going crazy. The men in the company are good kids, but I can't go trailing around after them all day. Besides, it wouldn't be right. They're all married, except Billy, who plays the kid and is young enough to be my son. We were supposed to pull out yesterday and play in Athens, Wisconsin tonight, but the theater burned down a few days ago, and we're not leaving until our next performance. When I heard the news, you'd have thought I had lost my mother. It's bad enough trying to find things to do during the day. When I think of having to stay another night here, it seems like...
Say, you don't have a good corset cover pattern, do you? One that fits smooth over the bust and doesn't slip off your shoulders? I just can't seem to get my hands on the kind I want.
Do I? Well, here, just a minute, let me find it.
Boy, you sure have a lot of stuff in that little suitcase. Whoa, you don't have to scatter it all over the floor. Oh, that's nice lingerie. Say, look at all these newspaper clippings. These are great. Oh, that's a beautiful blouse.
Here it is. It only takes a yard and 5/8 of fabric, and it fits tight as a well-made glove. comes down in a V front and back, like this. See? And no bulges. Wait a minute. I'll show you my princess slip. I made it all by hand, too. I'll bet you couldn't buy it under $15, and it cost me $4.80 with the lace and all.
Before an hour had passed, the leading lady had displayed all her treasures, from the photograph of her baby niece that died to her new curling iron. When a bell rang at 6 o'clock, signaling the end of the workday, Pearlie was in a contorted posture that was very difficult for a woman weighing over 200 pounds.
And this exercise is guaranteed to reduce your hips by at least 1 inch per month.
My land! It's quitting time, and I've got a stack of letters an inch thick to get out. I'd better reduce that pile before I work too much on my hips. But say, I've had a lovely time. Thanks for the hospitality.
No, thank you. You've saved my life. Why, I forgot all about being hot and lonely and a couple of thousand miles from home. Do you have to go?
Yes, I've got to. But if you'll promise you won't laugh, I'll take you with me this evening and at least get you out of this room. There's going to be a strawberry social on the lawn of the parsonage of our church. I've got a booth. You shed that kimono and put on a thin dress, get your hair all curled, put on some powder, and I'll introduce you as my friend, Miss Evans. It's probably not right to stretch the truth at a church social, but this is a Methodist church strawberry festival, so some lying is expected. But if I was to tell them that you are a leading lady in a theater show, they'd excommunicate my booth.
A strawberry social? Do they still have those? Why, I used to go to strawberry festivals when I was a little girl.
Careful, you'll be giving away your age. And anyway, you don't look it. Fashions at strawberry socials haven't changed much over the years. Better put a little eau de cologne behind your ears, or whatever it is they're always dabbing on themselves in those romance books. See you at 8.
At 8 o'clock, Pearlie's thump, thump sounded again, and when the leading lady answered the door, all Pearlie could do was stare. This was no tear-stained, heat-bedraggled creature in an unbecoming red-striped kimono. It was a remarkably pretty woman in a white gown. The leading lady knew a thing or two about the gentle art of putting on just the right amount of makeup in just the right places.
You look stunning! It just goes to show that you should never judge a woman in a kimono or a bathing suit. You look 19.
Why, thank you, Pearlie.
Say, I forgot something downstairs. Just grab your purse and any other little stuff you might need and meet in my cubbyhole next to the lobby, will you? I'll be ready for you.
Downstairs, Pearlie summoned the bellboy.
You go outside and tell Sid Strang I want to see him, will you? This time of evening, he's usually on the bench with that bunch of young men talking baseball.
The obedient Sid reached the door of Pearlie's little office just off the lobby as the leading lady came down the stairs with a spangled scarf trailing over her arm. It was an effective entrance.
Why, hello, Sid. What are you doing here?
But I thought...
Ethel, this is my friend, Mr. Sid Strang, one of our rising young lawyers. His neckties always match his socks. Sid, this is my friend, Miss Ethel Evans of New York. We're going over to the strawberry social at the Methodist Parsonage. I don't suppose you'd care to come along?
Nice to meet you, Miss Evans.
It's a pleasure, Mr. Strang.
Why, Pearlie Schultz, why do you even bother to ask? You know how much I love a strawberry social. I haven't missed one in years.
Oh, boy, do I know. You feel the same way about Thursday night prayer meetings, too, don't you?
Well,
You can walk over with us if you want to. We're going now. Miss Evans and I have got a booth.
You bet, Pearlie. Just lead the way.
But Pearlie was already leading the way. They walked past all the young men on benches in front of the hotel. And as the leading lady came into view, they stopped talking baseball and sat up and took notice. Pearlie called out cheerily,
"We're going over to the strawberry festival. I expect to see all you boys there to contribute a bit for the new church carpet."
The leading lady turned to look at them and smiled, and that was all it took. Those fellows were on their feet like they had been called to attention by an army drill sergeant. Whenever a new girl comes to visit in our town, our boys make a concerted rush at her. The effect was intensified by the loveliness of the leading lady. To a man, they fell into line, and it looked like a small parade heading to the church with Pearlie as the drum major. The ladies of the First Methodist Church still talk of the money they garnered at that strawberry festival. And Pearlie's out-of-town friend was garnerer-in-chief. The leading lady, in her white dress against the backdrop of the green lawn, looked like a picture in a fairy tale book. She stood at the booth, haloed by lantern light, with Pearlie in the background, and dispensed an unbelievable amount of strawberries. Sid Strang and the Hotel Bench Brigade assisted. They made arrangements to take Pearlie and her friend down to the river next day, and to the ball game, and planned innumerable picnics, gazing meanwhile into the leading lady's eyes. There was a flush in her cheeks, and it was not an illusion made by Japanese lanterns or the skillful application of rouge. By 9 o'clock, the strawberry supply was exhausted, and the Methodist pastor was wildly running around looking for more ice cream.
"It's an outrage making a poor working girl like me slave all evening. How many was that last order? 4? My land, that's the third dish of ice cream Ed White's had. You'll have something to tell the villagers about when you get back to New York, my friend."
"This is more fun than I've had in years."
"Yep, nothing like a good strawberry church social to get the blood rolling. It looks like we're wrapping up. The last lanterns are going out, and here comes the head of the Methodist Ladies' Society."
"Pearlie, I would like to thank you and your friend for all your help. Why, you girls brought in more than the rest of the booths combined."
"It's our pleasure."
"Oh, yes, it has been so much fun."
"Well, I would like to invite you both to the Methodist Ladies' Tea on Tuesday afternoon. Pearlie, I know you'll probably be working, but if your friend would like to join us..."
"Thank you. I would love to, and I will be there if I can."
Escorted by a bodyguard of young men led by Sid Strang, Pearlie and her friend, Miss Evans, walked toward the hotel. Sid seemed puzzled.
"Aren't you staying at Pearlie's house?"
"No, I'm not staying at Pearlie's because my name isn't Ethel Evans. It's Amy Fox, with a little French accent mark over the double E. I'm the leading lady of the Second Wife Theater Company and old enough to be... well, your auntie, anyway. But I appreciate your attentions, Mr. Strang. You have made me feel young again."
"Yeah. You know, Sid, for a lawyer, you're okay."
And with that, we must leave Pearlie Schultz to her cooking, her stenography, and her efforts in improving the lives of others. We hope you've enjoyed this Maplewood Barn Radio Theater presentation of two short stories by Edna Ferber, The Homely Heroine and The Leading Lady, adapted for radio by Brad Buchanan. Our players were Patricia Humphrey as Nellie, Alana Barragan-Scott as Pearlie, Anna Klatchko as Kate, the mother and the head of the Methodist Ladies' Society. Curly Catraba was Millie and the leading lady. David McSpadden was Sam and Sid, and Darren Helwich was the bellboy. We hope you've enjoyed this presentation by the Maplewood Barn Radio Players. This is your narrator, Byron Scott, thanking you for listening and hoping you will join us again next week at the same time for more classic stories right here on KBIA.